Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm John Adarola. I'm in a building that's feeling less and less like my own with every passing day, but I won't go into it because I'll just get mad. You know what we do have? We have Wednesday. You know, Wednesdays are big news days, and you know what that calls for? JR Jackson. How's it going, JR?
What's going on? Apparently, from what I'm seeing, it calls for my horrible internet connection, but I could go into that company that gives me bad internet service that I paid too much money for. But yeah, you know, other than that, it's a big news Wednesday. Spectrum sucks. But it's a big news day on Wednesday. Spectrum absolutely sucks. If you have the opportunity, do not use Spectrum service. Okay.
Yeah.
On to the news of the day.
You know who's not our sponsor? Spectrum. Anyway, you know who is? Shop TYT. You know what I'm wearing? The Dragon Squad shirt for the first time ever on the show. I mean, honestly, like, I don't want to make Carlos's head get too big, but that's pretty good. This is one of the best ever shirts at TYT, and it is now available at shoptyt.com. It's just really cool. Like, this is as close as I will ever come to wearing the mascot for a sports team. That is as close as it's going to be a political commentary community.
Then there's a couple of designs, right, John? There's also the TDR one as well. There's another shirt.
There is also, we have a Damage Report with a cool little, like a spray painty sort of vibe to it. But this one's up now too, just very cool. By the way, I was gonna pull the video for it. Someone, I guess, was teasing Cenk on the main show in the super chats about how much these are like selling, how much people like them. And so he had sort of salty response about, some other shirt. I think it was the Shut Up Man shirt or something. He was like, you know, maybe it'll sell. Probably not as well as Dragon Squad. We're getting to him.
It took you this long just to get your own shirt, and now you're already getting some pushback from the main guy. Come on,
bro. I know. Can I have 1 month? Seriously. But anyway, JR, I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that we've got some awesome stories to talk about. We also have some awesome people watching the show, and you know what would make them even more awesome? Liking the stream and perhaps sharing it, so the more people know that it's active. If you're on Twitch especially, share it. Let's see if we can match the viewership of AOC's stream last night. Probably not gonna happen. But anyway, we'll be talking about that later on. So with that, we've got a lot to talk about. So JR, why don't we jump right into it?
John?
What?
John. Give me like 2 seconds. I think I can, but I'm not sure I can.
Well, can you?
Hold on.
I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm a little bit worried. Okay, I don't know what he was trying to do, but I think what he did was nuked his computer's connection. No, wait, he's here. JR, what are you experimenting with over there?
I was making sure that you could see or hear me, and then it fell apart and I'm reconnected. Here I am.
Okay, well, I can see you and I can hear you.
Excellent. Okay, let's go.
So anyway, with that, let's both see and hear you talk about this insane 60 minutes back and forth. Donald Trump was apparently supposed to be interviewed for 60 minutes by Leslie Stahl. He sort of was, but not for 60 minutes. It was for about 45 minutes apparently. And what was supposed to be just an opportunity from the President of the United States to like get his message across in the closing weeks of this election that he is very much trailing in suddenly has turned into sheer insanity. So let's walk through the drums together. We have this tweet from Caitlin Collins with some behind the scenes information about how it all fell apart. Apparently, there was some drama while President Trump was taping his 60 Minutes interview today. He abruptly ended his solo interview after around 45 minutes and did not return for a scheduled walk and talk he was supposed to tape with Pence. He doesn't really want to be seen with Pence, I guess. And Pence didn't do it, apparently. So anyway, that was at first, that's what we knew, that he had left. He had walked out of an interview for some reason. Then he does this. He tweets a 5-second video, Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes not wearing a mask in the White House after interview with me, much more to come. But does there have to be? Does there have to be more to come? You know what could have come? Just an interview between a reporter and a sane person. But apparently that's not one of the things that's gonna be coming. And look, we've got more because there are layers to this, but JR, he has taken what could have been an interview and he's apparently turning it into a feud with Leslie Stahl, which I don't think a lot of people are really invested in him defeating. I don't know, maybe it's popular with red hats for them to bash on Leslie Stahl, I don't know.
The problem here is that the impressive part about this is that Trump has graduated to about the middle school level of deflecting from a bad situation. Usually it's just name calling, look at her face, look at how she sounded, look where she's bleeding from, all that stuff that he's done in the past. At least this time, he's looking to deflect on something else. He's like, well, let me go ahead and try and like and go after whatever she's done or whatever she looks like or whatever 5-second moment I can catch her in so that no one can talk about how horrible this interview went. Oh, I'm gonna release it early. So anytime this guy pulls out this many stops to change the subject matter of what probably was said, asked and not answered in that interview, speaks volumes as to how much he doesn't want it to actually be seen. Usually it's just a name calling, oh, we'll get over now. And then my friends like how I can bully people around, it'll be fun. Now he's actually really going in hard to make sure no one really sees what happened here. So it must've been really bad.
Yeah, well, but I don't know. I mean, inevitably we're gonna see it. And it turns out there isn't just one way that we might see it. You know, the normal way, they film the interview and then the interview comes out, presumably on 60 Minutes or at least a curtailed version of it. He might actually release it. So yeah, let's continue. He tweeted about 16 hours ago, I am pleased to inform you that for the sake of accuracy in reporting, I am considering posting my interview with Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes prior to airtime. This will be done so that everybody can get a glimpse of what a fake and biased interview is all about. Everyone should compare this terrible electoral intrusion, capitalized, with the recent interviews of sleepy Joe Biden. So he had an issue with the interview. He stormed out of the interview. He then mocked the person doing the interview. And now rather than just letting the interview come out, he's gonna release it preemptively, which I don't think you're supposed to do when you get interviewed. They were apparently recording it for like archival purposes for the White House. Right. So he's gonna release it, but what is he gonna release? Just the interview, presumably. I mean, maybe they'll edit it in some way.
Absolutely.
How is that better? What is going on? Where are we? What year is it? I don't understand. Just sit down and answer the questions, you big moron. Like that's all you have to do. You desperately need this. And yeah, I get it. He could just post really fast. He could just post a photo of Leslie Stahl and he could just call her the C word and invite all of his friends to do it. And they would like that. The base would like that. But I don't think the suburban women that he so desperately wants to like him are like, you know what I want? I want him to tear down Savannah Guthrie. And then get that B Leslie Stahl, then I'll support you, Trump, and thanks for saving my neighborhood.
No, honestly, well, you're looking at a strategy approach or a strategic approach to something that maybe you would do even if you're a bad guy. He seems to, and there's been some, I've seen only headlines because I won't read too deep into it, but it seems like since the COVID thing, it's been like more, I don't know, I didn't think it was possible, but more of like a flame throwing approach to everything he does and says. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking like he would have a strategy to start tearing down people so that he can move in a certain direction. He's cornering himself by saying, well, I'm gonna release this 45-minute interview. He didn't say in its entirety because he wouldn't, but whatever 60 Minutes releases, it can't possibly be better than you releasing more, because more is what is bad. So I don't see really reason for him to release it. He's just kind of throwing out threats now. But usually your threats would put the pressure on the other person. This threat puts the pressure on you, bro. Well, like people would be like, I don't care if CBS releases it, fine, release it. What do we have to be afraid of? You don't look bad.
It's or did he? Because he apparently doesn't think so. Okay, so let's walk through the strategy of the Trump stall, you know, rumble in the jungle. So he walks out of it and we're gonna have some behind the scenes information about why he might have walked away. He says at a rally, because this is now part of his material, he says, oh, and you have to watch what we do to 60 Minutes. You'll get such a kick out of, you're gonna get a kick out of it. Leslie Stahl is not going to be happy. Okay, so we're gonna try to get into his mindset and figure this out. So Leslie Stahl is not going to be happy that he's releasing the interview that she appears to have been just fine with coming out, that he walked out of. I don't know what that means, and I'm trying.
I came up with it, John. This is the answer. This is what he thinks, and it's, I think this matches, right? So he's obsessed with ratings, and every time he talks about media organizations, he doesn't talk about how it's, he cries foul and it's false and fake news. But every time he comes back to ratings, so he thinks, man, 60 Minutes, man, they got this big scoop to have me on. So they're gonna release it on whenever, Sunday. I don't know when 60 Minutes comes on, but they're gonna release it on Sunday. I'm gonna release it sooner, and it's gonna destroy their ratings. That's his only play here. That's all he's thinking. That's gotta be it.
Maybe.
He's like, oh, they're gonna be so mad because I'm gonna release it and then they don't have it exclusive. That's really what it is.
Let's say that you're right. Okay, so let's go through it. Let's process strategically, is this good for him? So in terms of the ratings, now his episode, according to his theoretical strategy, will now get far lower views than Joe Biden's, because Joe Biden is also gonna be interviewed by Leslie Stahl. And this is coming off of dueling town halls where he got better ratings already, Joe Biden did.
Right.
So if he's obsessed with ratings, that seems like a bad idea. And think about the two different audiences. So he could just wait and release it to 60 Minutes. And there's presumably a lot of people who watch 60 Minutes that aren't necessarily predisposed to vote for him, that if he had given a sane interview, might be swayed. Instead, he's going to shank that and release it himself on Twitter, I guess. And that will get his base to watch it, but they're already voting for him. And all of this goes to, is he the electoral genius that people are assuming that he is? And I am searching for evidence and I am coming up empty. I've got nothing. This seems like he likes it. All of this is psychologically, this is him, you know, Jeffrey tubing for like the whole country. That's effectively what it is. And it works for his base. They like it because they're doing the same Zoom call shenanigans as he is. That's all politics is to them. But in terms of actually winning an election and winning over new people, even the people he's explicitly saying he wants to win over, I don't see any of this actually helping him. I just don't. Maybe I'm crazy. Tell me in the chat if I'm crazy. I don't think so.
Well, there's been a string of things he's done recently that don't make much sense. And big supporters of his, I mean, we're gonna talk about Mike Huckabee, and we've talked, and then Brian Kilmeade is trying to find ways to figure out why he would do such a thing. You know, Brian Kilmeade had two instances where he's like, I don't know why he would do this. It was the not condemning white supremacy, and then I forget the second one, but they're all trying to figure out why.
Stopping negotiations for the stimulus.
Yeah, that was right. They're like, why would he torpedo these so many things? I thought he was a genius. Like, they can't figure it out because none of it makes any sense. So especially from your point of view, John, where we're actually critical of the things that he does, people that are supportive of everything he does are also, they're perplexed because none of it makes any sense. It's shooting himself in the foot and it's slapping himself in the face. And then they keep going back and going, I thought he was a master negotiator. Bro, we've been talking about this his entire life, that he's not a master negotiator. He's just fooled you long enough to believe so.
Maybe. So you gave us your potential theory. I have a potential theory, and I'm gonna roll it out in just 1 minute. I wanna just read a little bit of this behind the scenes information first. And I think in the end, I bold prediction, my theory, I think a lot of people are gonna agree with it. So according to a person with knowledge of what happened during the interview, Trump was unhappy that Stahl asked him tough questions regarding his rhetoric about Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, you know, saying she deserves to be locked up, effectively saying the militia was doing the right thing, and his handling of the coronavirus pandemic, which he's been complaining about the fact that there's a focus on in the election at rallies, as well as the size of the crowds at his rallies, which are super spreader events, and his disputes with Anthony Fauci, a guy that he's pretending supports him who doesn't, the nation's leading infectious disease expert. Notably, it's Fauci, it's not Scott Atlas. Stahl also told him during the interview that allegations against Biden's son Hunter were not verified, which is true, and that the Obama administration did not spy on the Trump campaign, because they didn't. Many of the questions were about the coronavirus pandemic and his handling of it, said this unnamed person who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the interview frankly, and so that like they didn't wake up with Roger Stone's head in their bed or something. So when Trump first walked in, Stahl looked at him and said, are you ready for a tough interview? The president believes 60 Minutes will cut the interview in an unflattering way and has been talking all afternoon about how to preempt the footage, said this person. So they'd cut it in an unflattering way, which means using video footage, because there's no flattering thing that they're gonna get out of that. So here's my theory. Here's what happened. He walked into the interview, She was tough. She asked him about the multiple crises facing America and his election strategy being founded in right-wing fever dreams about Hunter Biden. He lost it. He ran out. And all of this stuff is cover. That's all it is. It's not a real strategy. It's not preempting. It looks bad that I had a hissy fit and ran out of the room. So I'm going to make it seem as if I've got a big storm brewing, that I've got this plan, that I'm like, no, you ran out. I don't know if it was because he was roided up or just because he's naturally, he has the emotional resilience of a 5-year-old on too much sugar. But that's what I think it is. I think he ran out and he doesn't want to look like he ran out. So he's going to make it about Leslie Stahl, who apparently just asked him tough, honest questions.
And I bet you some of those tough, honest questions were follow-ups that included the words who, what, wait, when, wait, well, why? Like those are simple one-word follow-up questions. No, and it seems I tweet it all the time, especially in the interviews when someone doesn't ask more debates or the town halls when no one asks them. Wait, okay, so why? If you say, well, why would this happen? Everything is a prediction of what will happen in Joe Biden's America. If you just ask him, well, why would that happen? How would that happen? Oh, you said everything is bouncing back so much and the economy is shooting off like a rocket ship. Can you give me those numbers? Where? It's simple questions. This isn't hard.
Yeah.
A middle school journalist can do it. If you're just learning about how to ask someone a question, how to interview someone, it's just, well, how? It's just a general curiosity for the answer without moving on just because the president said something and then moving on. That's what we do in politics and in political reporting now. If the politician says something and talks long enough the way Mike Pence does, eventually you just say, okay, we run out of time, so let's move on to the next. Instead of going, well, how?
Like I said, we have two categories of things left to potentially affect the election. Well, three. We have three categories of things that could potentially affect the election, which he has differing levels of control over. One is purely random domestic or international events. Someone attacks us. There's a terror attack, something like that. I don't know. The pandemic is hypothetically one of those things. There's stuff that he's supposed to be doing during the campaign, like the interview with Leslie Stahl, like the debates, which he's now down to just one. He has one last chance to do something sane to turn this around. And then there's the stuff I'm most worried about, which is what's he going to announce? What's like, I keep saying next Wednesday, big news Wednesday before the election, he announces the vaccine. You heard it here first, clip it out. We're not going to, but and with this regularly scheduled stuff, I don't know what he's doing, man. It doesn't mean he can't win. He can win because life is hell, but it doesn't seem like he's gonna win because of a strategy, because the strategy ain't there. Oh, it's just not.
Yeah, he's definitely not convincing anyone based off of any kind of a vision of a great future under Donald Trump. It's strictly because it's like, we have to surround ourselves with each other and you voted for me just because you hate everyone else. That's the only thing there.
Yeah, that's it.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
update on the, what I would argue is one of the most horrendous effects of the Trump administration was the massive expansion and institutionalization of family separation as like the specific doctrine of the Trump administration, and specifically to be as cruel as possible to scare people away from coming to the country because of the horror at the prospect of losing your child. So we now have an update on that, and it's awful. Lawyers appointed by a federal judge to identify migrant families who were separated by the Trump administration say that they have yet to track down the parents of 545 children. And that about 2/3 of those parents were deported to Central America without their children, according to a filing just yesterday from the ACLU. To catch you up, the Trump administration instituted a zero tolerance policy back in 2018 that separated migrant children and parents at the southern US border. The administration later confirmed that it had actually begun separating families in 2017 along some parts of the border under a pilot program. Apparently, they liked the results of it, so they expanded it. Unlike the 2,800 families separated under zero tolerance in 2018, most of whom remained in custody when the policy was ended by executive order, many of the more than 1,000 parents separated from their children under the pilot program had already been deported before a federal judge in California ordered that they be found, partially because we didn't know about it. And so while a good number of families have been reunited, we have this massive group that haven't been, and there is not a lot of reason to believe that they ever will be, JR.
Yeah, let's revisit what happened with the child separation thing. So as you talked about, there was the pilot program, which I didn't previously know about either. But the fact that there was first a pilot program where they decided to test this out to see exactly how cruel and inhumane they can be for the sake of deterring people that were fleeing cruel and inhumane circumstances to try and flee and come to a country that they've been sold on believing isn't like that. That's the first thing that strikes a lot of these folks when they get here is, oh man, we went from a really bad situation to just an almost really bad situation, just a definitely a bad one. So you come in this country, and then the policy is to separate kids as young as infants from their parents and then split them up because that will make it down the line to other folks that are fleeing to not try it. I'm not sure how the communication would work with that, especially after you just lost your child. But now with the mix up in the way they even carried that part out. So the kidnapping wasn't even organized enough for you to reunite these folks with their families. So in order for you to have this plan, you have to have such a detachment from the humanity of certain folks that you do this to. This is where racism comes into view here. So everyone who's mad about how racism keeps getting brought up by minorities, this is one of the reasons why. If you're a racist, you have this view of certain folks that they're less than human. That's the only way you can treat them like animals is because you call them animals, which this president has definitely done multiple times. So if your policy, which we see has been absolutely detailed here from a pilot program to a full on government program, I think it's a direct result of your racism leading to policy that affects people's lives. Now, if you look and have that number 542, I believe it was, children that are still separated and the thousands of others that were reunited but have lifelong trauma. How about these folks that are sitting there? Do they put their brains and their bodies in this child's position? And you remember when you were 5 years old maybe and think, man, there was that one time I was at the grocery store and I got separated from my mother for 5 seconds and it felt like an hour. And you're screaming through the store, you don't know where your mom is. Now, how about for the rest of your life? They don't put themselves in that situation because they don't think these people are humans like they are. So only way you can pull these types of things off. This is why being a racist is one of the worst things, because it leads to more inhumane things, punishments of folks that don't deserve it. And then you feel like you're better than them. And then that feeds your ego and it feeds your racism. This is why it's a problem when you walked out and you come down the escalator and the first thing you say is they're rapists, they're murderers, they're criminals, and maybe a few of them are good people. That's why it was a problem from the first thing this guy said when he came in office, is because we knew it would turn into policy that would honestly hurt the people that he just said are not real human beings. That's why racism is a problem, because it leads to stuff like this.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. On the effect, on why they did it, why so many Trump supporters aren't bothered by it, because you know this stands out not only as one of the most horrendous things that they have done in their time, but also just added to the list of things that didn't bother any elected Republicans, no Republicans and conservatives in media, and seemingly none of his voters. Maybe 1% dropped off Maybe that's partly why he's losing now. But I don't remember seeing a lot of them saying, well, this is a bridge too far. After all, I'm a conservative. I care about family values and I'm pro-life and all of that. No, they don't seem to actually be bothered by it at all. You know, the uterus collector story. Was Fox News, like, were they angry about that? I mean, pro-life again, but again, pro certain types of life. Let's be clear, pro-white life. That's what they want. And the thing about this that shocks me the most is, so obviously we talked about it a lot. Actually, the time that AOC came on the show, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, was to talk about this story because she had just gone to one of the border facilities. When I look at that and that number, it's 545 children still haven't been reunited. It reminds me of the pandemic in a way. It's one of those things that just goes to how flawed our dumb monkey brains are, is that if it was one child, it could be a documentary. It could be a story. It could be like, think about like stories like, you know, Elian Gonzalez or something like that. Like one person is a whole thing, but lots of them, it was a policy. It was bureaucratic. It's removed. We should, like, if one person deserves 3 days of coverage, 5 days of mentions, shouldn't this last year's, it's that many more, but it doesn't. It actually makes it. Like, maybe it's because we look at that story and we just think, oh my God, I don't want to think about how unrepentantly evil the people we've given the power of life and death are. But they are, and they don't care. Stephen Miller's not losing sleep over this. I mean, I know that he looks like he's aging prematurely and falling apart, but that's not because of this. The whole thing is just disgusting. It's just disgusting. And thankfully, there are groups like the ACLU that are staying on this and making sure that we know this.
It's such a good point about if this was a document about one person and one person struggling, one family struggling, look what happened. It would stand out because we'd associate yourself with that one person. And can you believe what happened to them? And now, I mean, same with COVID, over 200,000 dead and then thousands a day new cases. Like, well, we've lost that many. What's 5,000 new cases a day? You know, it's all minimized because the numbers got so big that it's like, oh, well, at least it's not a million. Then if it gets to a million, at least it's not 2 million. Like, you can always pump up the number and say it could be worse.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, God. I wonder what percent they will. I mean, a lot are gone. Like, they're not gonna bring the parents back. Maybe some, but it's still gonna end up being hundreds at the very least. Yeah. God. Okay, let's move on to another serious topic. Okay. One of the cores of Trump's reelection message is that Hunter Biden made a lot of money in China and Ukraine. Maybe Joe too, I don't know. The theory is very loose, but it's that the son of Joe Biden, his opponent, was enriching himself based on stuff having to do with China and Ukraine. And here's the weird thing. We've got some news that unfortunately didn't come from a reputable source, like a laptop in a pawn shop. It comes from the New York Times. Maybe that's something about Trump's financial history with China, which arguably might be relevant to the election as well. If we're gonna be talking about people enriching themselves in China, maybe we could also talk about the people who are actually running rather than their relatives. And certainly in the past, we've talked about his own relatives enriching themselves in China. But again, it didn't come from a pawn shop, so I'm not gonna waste your time with it. So let's give you just a little bit from the New York Times most recent reporting. And again, this is like the fifth story in a string of stories having to do with their renewed focus on his financial history, including from the tax documents that they were able to get access to at the New York Times. Mr. Trump's own business history is filled with overseas financial deals, and some have involved the Chinese state. He spent a decade unsuccessfully pursuing projects in China, operating an office there during his first run for president, and forging a partnership with a major government-controlled company. And it turns out that China is one of only three foreign nations, the others are Britain and Ireland, where Mr. Trump maintains a bank account, according to an analysis of the president's tax records. Again, this is coming from that. The foreign accounts do not show up on Mr. Trump's public financial disclosures, weird oversight, where he must list personal assets because they're held under corporate names. The identities of the financial institutions are not clear. The tax records do not include details on how much money may have passed through the overseas accounts through the IRS, though the IRS does require filers to report the portion of their income derived from other countries. Now, they're not doing that, so presumably if there's money, then he's violating a law there. It's not super clear. In response to questions from the Times, Alan Garten, a lawyer for the Trump Organization, said the company had, quote, opened an account with a Chinese bank having offices in the US in order to pay the local taxes associated with efforts to do business there. He said the company had opened the account after establishing an office in China to explore the potential for hotel deals in Asia. Now, Mr. Garten does say no deals, transactions, or other business activities ever materialized. And since 2015, the office has remained inactive. Though the bank account remains open, it has never been used for any other purposes. Although he wouldn't even say which bank in China it was. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, and we don't know if it's this bank. Until last year, China's biggest state-controlled bank rented 3 floors in Trump Tower. Not 3 rooms, 3 floors. A lucrative lease that drew accusations of a conflict of interest for the president. That is until last year. Years into his presidency, a massive state-owned bank was giving him tons of money. 3 whole floors in his biggest, most important, most financially lucrative property. Now, again, this isn't rock solid reporting like the blind guy with the laptop in the pawn shop, but the New York Times is doing what they can. He was making money from China while in a political position to give them something in exchange for it. Hunter Biden had Joe Biden. He wasn't president, so arguably it's not as powerful a position with which to cash in, but maybe it's worth at least a few minutes of our time in the run up to this election.
You know what, the part about this that's gonna help him is that, again, because there's details. In Americans, we don't do well with details. But again, it goes back to a very simple question. If his attorney wants to say that they have these bank accounts open, he was there for preliminary purposes to see what kind of deals we can pull off in Asia for hotels and everything. And then it's kind of come up empty. There's many ways to go ahead and prove to the American people that don't trust you, which a large majority don't, to prove to us that everything is on the up and up. Show us. Show us how nothing's funneling through these bank accounts. Show us what is coming through them. Tell us why that this Chinese company is rented out 3 floors of rooms in your building and how much knowledge you had about it. And then why you're so secretive about all of this. We all know why, because there's things in there that you don't want to tell us. Now, if it's anyone else, if this happens on the opposite side of the aisle, I can't tell you how much hair pulling is gonna happen from Republicans. Say, can you imagine what's happening? They won't even be, can you imagine? They'll just say what's happening with absolutely no proof behind what's happening. They'll just come to conclusions. Did you know that he's running this many hotels in this country and that's what's going on? But the fact that there's so much of this is gonna allow even us, not specifically us TYT, but specifically people that oppose this guy to move on to the next. It's like, well, how do we really dig deep into this one and get him to answer? Man, I don't know, maybe Leslie Stahl brought it up in the 60 Minutes interview right before he stepped out. Maybe she asked one of those very important questions. Well, where are the records? Maybe it was where. Maybe where of the easy questions was the one she pulled up. Maybe it was how. I don't know. How about why?
Maybe.
Whichever one of those things made him jump up and run, because there's way too many questions regarding this story that we don't have any answers to.
Yeah, I don't even know what the questions might have been, but the fact that she hypothetically might have asked him is making me so mad that I want to leave the room and then pretend that it's a power move. I'm an alpha. Anyway, here's what we have. We have enough potential conflict of interest that by itself is a problem. We have, like in some of the other New York Times reporting, we have the implication that tax law was being violated, but we don't know for sure. Because again, we still don't have his taxes, which years ago stopped being a thing that I was mad at Donald Trump at. He's never gonna release it. Now I'm mad at the Democrats, including Richard Neal, who hypothetically could have had access to it. And then also we have, just to jump ahead just a little bit, actually it's not jumping that much ahead. Not long after winning the 2016 election, Mr. Trump reported selling a penthouse in one of his Manhattan buildings for $15.8 million to a Chinese American businesswoman named Zhao Yan Chen, who bought the unit previously occupied by Ivanka Trump and her husband Jared Kushner. In an off-market transition, Mr. Chen runs an international consulting firm and reportedly has high-level connections to government and political elites in China, but I'm sure that Trump didn't know that. He apparently made a capital gain of at least $5.6 million from the penthouse sale in 2017 when he again was president. And here's the thing, man. Like, I saw someone in the Twitch chats like, wait, what about the emoluments clause? And I'm sure it was intended as a joke, because it is in practice. We have to remember that, like with so much, America, like in the words of the great Mike Lee, America is not a democracy. And I would only add that America is doing democratic cosplay. Like, it has some of the trappings, but they're cheaply made at best. They're not doing their best. Yeah, we have an emoluments clause and we can hypothetically impeach people and we have all of this stuff. But like, it's glued on at best. It doesn't really mean anything. Trump can do whatever he wants. He can get paid as much as he wants. It's cosplay. And it's the word, normally I'm into it. In this case, I'm not. I prefer the real thing.
Well, people show up at the conventions in this point, his rallies, and they did get a glimpse of it, like at cosplay conventions. They're like, oh man, I'd love to really get to know that person. Oh, maybe that person is real. No, they're fake. They're just dressed up. They're gonna go home and put on regular clothes. They're not really that person. It's a fantasy, just like you're saying. It's a fantasy. Yeah. You show up in that way.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh. In the run-up to the election, we know that tensions are running high. There's worries about political intimidation, political violence, and we're seeing an indication of that that seems very, very legit. Fox News had this: New Hampshire homeowners receive threatening letters over Trump 2020 lawn signs. Now, if you just see that headline, which is the way everyone consumes news, that's really bad. I don't want people to be targeted because of their political signs, even if they make the bad decision of supporting Donald Trump. You can display whatever sign you want. And so let's get into the details. At least two residents who displayed pro-Trump flags and signs on their front lawns in small town New Hampshire reportedly received letters threatening to burn down their homes if the presidential election did not result in a victory for Democratic candidate Joe Biden. Captain Craig Fry of the Milford Police told Fox News the department referred the case to the US Postal Inspection Service and the state attorney general's office, which is conducting an investigation. So those are the official details as they are made available in that Fox story. Spoiler alert, there's a little bit more to this that I'm gonna try to reveal. But based off of that, JR, what do you think? People threatening each other because of their signs and their flags. That's un-American.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah, it's both the most surprising and unsurprising development we'll see from this, because you know, we're already talking about how our militia men are supposed to show up at polling places to intimidate folks from not voting or voting the wrong way, whatever it is they want to tell people, or act like that they're the ones that show up to uphold voter consistency. So this is absolutely not surprising that now once you see yard signs and see what people may go for, start threatening them, because once the fear has really started to dig into their souls to see what could potentially happen this election cycle, and then the results of that happening, once this guy could be out of office, you know, you go for desperate moves. Desperate times call for what? You know, desperate measures. And it's just another example of how of the mindset. It's we'll try anything we can. We're now attempting the cheating and the stealing part, and just in case that doesn't work, let's go ahead and go with the direct intimidation and threats on people's lives if they vote the quote unquote wrong way, because you know, we're Americans, and oh boy, we hate those third world countries that we're trying to fix and bring more to a democratic approach that we be to. You know, the shining example on the hill. All these things that we like to say, but that many of our citizens and apparently now leaders don't really believe in. So I you know, it's tough, and I wish people that are being targeted like this get the opportunity to have a little pushback and hopefully aren't intimidated by it. You know, I assume many of this is just empty threats, but you never know. That's the point of it.
I do think it's empty threats, but I think there's also a little bit more to it. So let's have a little bit of fun, as much fun as you can have with the implied threat of political violence. One of my favorite YouTube channels is called Shut Up and Sit Down. They do board game reviews, very high quality, very well researched, very well considered. What they are known for is what's called the mid-review turnaround, where they'll be talking about all that's good about a game, how it looks, how it plays, and then they'll switch and they'll start talking about the stuff that makes it bad and why they can't recommend it. So we're about to do a TDR mid-story turnaround. So do I think that these things were sent to people with Trump signs? Yes, I do. Do I think that the people, for instance, the people in that Fox News story who are talking about how intimidated they feel, are they right to feel intimidated? They 100% are. Even though they're Trump supporters, they are. But who is intimidating them? I've got a theory. And I don't think it's leftists or Biden supporters, because the actual letters that they got are not in that Fox News story, but there are references to things in the letter. We were actually given a copy of the letter by Marganelli on Twitter. And so I want to read through what was actually sent to them. And we're going to see if we can figure out who's likely to have actually sent this. Dear neighbor, you have been dear neighbor. That's what I send when I'm threatening someone's life. Dear neighbor, you have been identified by our group as being a Trump supporter. Your address has been added into our database as a target for when we attack should Trump not concede the election. We recommend that you check your home insurance policy and make that it is current and that it has adequate coverage for fire damage. You have been given fair warning. Always remember that it was you, in quotation marks, that started this civil war. Be prepared to face the severe consequences of your preemptive actions against democracy. Okay.
This, yeah.
No, you first. What do you think?
There's so many. I don't know. There's so many angles to this, because then also there was emails that went out to like some Florida students. You know, they were on the opposite side of it, saying, you know, if you don't vote towards Trump, there's going to be a problem here. We're the Proud Boys, and the Proud Boys had to disavow it and say it wasn't them. And apparently, it was coming from some server and overseas. So there's so many different approaches.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, right. So like, yeah, how much that matches up with this, I don't know. And how much this is supposed to be coordinated with making sure that there's a across the board voter threat thing that's going on now, I don't know. But the letter, dear neighbor, I mean, I know whenever, I've never had a fight with any neighbors, but I've seen it on TV. And a lot of times when it happens, you usually don't go, hey, how you doing there, neighbor? You know what? F you.
Heidi ho. Heidi ho, coming for you kids.
Heidi ho, so who you voting for? Oh, you better not, or else I'm gonna shoot you. Like, this is weird. I don't know. So, and on, maybe they started off as friends and then it ended badly. So they still have some level of respect for each other. None of it makes any sense. That's the point. Is So I don't know where to follow this from. Honestly,
no. Look, I don't like to speak in absolutes because it annoys me when people do it, and I'm a literal idiot. But I know what this is. Come on. This is a false flag. It's a false paper. I don't know. It was sent by someone who supports Donald Trump to scare people so that the news will cover it, which they did. It's on Fox News to make it seem as if leftists are the violent ones. None of that makes any sense for a leftist to have actually sent. You've been identified as a Trump supporter. Well, I mean, they did have the sign. I guess that makes sense. They're like implying that they have some sort of secret database. They have signs, obviously. The dear neighbor, the you've been given fair warning. You started this civil war. Check your insurance for fire damage. What sort of threat is this? None of this makes any sense. This is a right wing Antifa fever dream. First of all, it's not even, as someone on Twitch pointed out, it's not even on official Antifa letterhead. And no Antifa super soldier would use a font that small. They use 28 or higher. We all know this. No, this is obvious BS to get the right wing to go crazy, to get Ben Shapiro to squeak about it, to get Charlie Kirk to Twitch about it. That's all it's designed to do, is for them to freak out and pretend that this is the violence that we should be worried about in our election. This is what we should be worried about before a voting day. That is it. I've never been more confident of anything in my life.
Well, the only thing they missed was the Comic Sans font. That's the only thing they left out.
Which is a very threatening font, by the way. Most people don't accept that, but anyway, yeah, no, it's so fake. Look, are people making threats? Potentially, yes. There are things you should worry about. Like, I saw a story, by the way, of someone whose hand was gashed open because apparently people had been ripping political signs out, even ripping Trump signs out, let's be fair. And so this Trump supporter had rigged razor blades on the bottom of their thing, so that if you ripped it out, you'd cut your hands open, which happened to this person. The person who set that booby trap, which is totally illegal, you can't do that, says, I have no idea how the razor blades got there. I guess it came that way from Party City. Anyway, this is just such a lie.
Well, Trump signs are sold from his website with the razor blades included, only on some, you just don't know which ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. By the way, there's a comment. I thought Anna had cleared off the toy shelf. Oh no, they did. They did. I had to set it back up this morning, actually, and I don't even think I did it right. So now it's never gonna be right again.
Anyway. Well, John, what you have to do is put some razor blades on the bottom to make sure that no one moves them next time.
Yeah. If you touch my AOC action figure, the bottom of it is coated with sulfuric acid. I don't know how it got there. My Dobby is rigged to explode. That sounds like something Jeffrey Toobin would say. Anyway, okay, so let's push right on to our next story because I'm now feeling very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give Mike Huckabee credit for something he had to say. He's on Fox and Friends this morning and they're talking about the election and he made a good point. Let's watch.
If you, one thing I know for sure, if you actually order a Trumpy bear, you're most likely gonna vote for Donald Trump. That according to a new study I just did. I also have found out that your daughter is leaning towards the president, but we're looking for a second source. 36 million people voted already, Governor Huckabee, and people think automatically that that's good for Democrats. I think it's good for America. What about you?
Yeah, I think it is too. It shows an extraordinary interest. When people are lined up to vote, it means that they really care. They don't drive by and say, long line, forget about it. They get in that line and they wait an hour and a half and they cast their vote. It shows the passion of the American people. In these final days, what the president has to do is forget about Hunter Biden, forget about all the distractions of everything except one thing. Remind the American people that it is their lives that's really on the mark right now.
But it's Governor, he's leading with Hunter Biden. Is that a mistake?
Yeah, it is a mistake because the average person doesn't understand it. It's too complicated. Right. And frankly, it doesn't matter to them. They care about their health care costs. They care about their taxes. They care about safety in their neighborhood, on their block, and in their yard. Focus on that. He wins the election by a landslide.
JR, that's mostly there's stuff I don't like in that, and we'll focus on that. But that's good advice
about how to stop focusing on cartoon issues. You mean,
yeah,
made up conspiracy theories? Yeah, it's good advice. The problem is he's talking to Donald Trump, who's I'm sure has gotten that advice. Guarantee you he's gotten that advice. Other Republicans have quietly said it. They just didn't say it as directly as Mike Huckabee did because they're afraid of him. Well, Mike Huckabee is too, but at least he's not worried about losing a seat or anything like that now. So that's when Republican courage really boils to the top, is when there's no consequences left from the guy that you're talking to. Just the sentence said, yeah, I think it is a mistake. That sentence has never been uttered by any other conservative in this entire 4 years this guy's been in office at all. Nothing he says is a mistake.
Yeah. That's true. And that's why, look, Biden acknowledging they made mistakes at the last town hall. I like that. Hopefully stop doing it. But I like that. So
let's keep it real. I'm sorry, John. Let's keep it real. One small thing. He said he's gonna win by a landslide if he does this. Yeah, no, he's not. That's the part that I was like, come on, please. If he flips in the last couple of weeks and decides to start talking about policy that he has none of, he's not winning by a landslide. Let's just keep it real. If he wins, it's definitely not by a landslide.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, he's not 100% right. It won't make him win by a landslide. And honestly, it's probably, you know, like knock on whatever this table's made of. It's probably too late to legitimately win the election on the vote. There's less than 2 weeks at this point. Again, anything could happen. There's three different categories, remember. We'll go through them again in the future. But I do think it gives him a better chance. The Hunter Biden stuff is not going to win over the very few people that are still undecided. That's not what they're waiting for. If they cared about that stuff, they would already be watching Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity every night. That's designed for it. They'd be doing that. It is designed to stroke his ego. That's it. He likes that stuff. That's how he thinks. That's how he won the Republican primary. That's how he thinks he won against Hillary Clinton. I don't think that's actually true, but that's what he thinks. It makes more sense. Mike Huckabee, just talk about. Pretend you care about the pandemic, you big, dumb, stupid idiot. Like, just pretend. I know that you don't. I know that you're not gonna do anything. Pretend you're gonna do something. And next Wednesday, we're gonna get that when he launches the vaccine. But he should have been doing that for months. I do think he could have won this election in a landslide. I just think it's too late now. If he had pretended to care about whether the people he rules lives or dies, he would have won in a landslide. That's how low the bar is. He couldn't even pass that bar. One other point. It is good. Oh, no. It's going to be about something else, so continue.
Just the very beginning of that, when Kilmeade and Mike Huckabee were talking about the 36 million people that have jumped out early. We all know, and this is very well known, Republicans don't like it when more people come out to vote. So let's not try and flip that script either and be like, oh man, I don't see why they're saying 36 million people coming out unprecedented to vote so early is a bad thing. Yeah, it's great. It's great. I mean, it is great for America, as they said, but not for the people that these two guys are supporting. So that whole line of BS just isn't going to fly either. They openly have said how they don't want people to vote. And if they did want people to vote, they wouldn't suppress people's vote to the degree that they do. So those are they just don't add up.
Yeah. I don't think that they actually like that the turnout is going up. Like they're pretending that they do. What they do like is it's so patriotic that people are waiting in lines. No, again, the lines are a failure driven mostly by the fact that, again, America does democratic cosplay and doesn't do actual democracy. Yeah. Any line is a failure. I'm looking at you, Panda Express, and I'm looking at you, American Democracy. I don't want to wait in line, and I shouldn't have to, whether for chow mein or to exercise my democratic rights. That's not the way it's supposed to work. And by the way, hour and a half lines are not the problem. They're an issue, and they shouldn't exist. And I've effectively never had to wait for an hour and a half. It's 5-hour lines and 8-hour lines and 11-hour lines. No one should have to do that anywhere in the world. Okay, we've got an EV Hummer. Okay, we should be able to get people through a line to vote in less than 10 hours. I don't think that's asking too much.
Yeah, they don't want it. It's obvious. Yeah. And I wish I'd have said it before you did. If you're at the grocery store and the line is more than 5-6 people, you know what you're gonna start doing? Complaining. You'd be like, why don't they open up another register? I can't believe this. Look at all these people buying something. You can't afford another cashier? Yeah, that's what people say when they're standing in line at the grocery store. Yeah. But they don't stand there and go, man, that lady in front of me has a cart full of groceries and I've got 4 things. This is great. I'm being patriotic.
Yeah.
No, that's not what you think.
I feel like I'm a part of the solution. The entire gaming very online world exploded just 2 days ago when Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, would anyone like to play games with me on Twitch? In particular, Among Us, which is a game that has just taken over Twitch in recent weeks. And she did it. It took a little bit to set up, but she and a group of streamers, including Hassan, previously of the Young Turks, played a game. And I want to give you a little bit of information about it. But first, here is a bit of a mashup of some of her reactions from playing this game. All you need to know is effectively it's a game of people ostensibly working together, but one of them is an imposter trying to kill the others, and you need to figure out who. Here is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez playing Among Us.
Yes, on Discord.
It's totally Toast. Oh my gosh. It's him. I know it is. It wasn't him.
The body.
Someone else will take care of that, right?
No.
Okay, come on. Come on, I know that there are people, I'm not even gonna name some of my least favorite people in the world who had an issue with this on Twitter.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like this? Who doesn't like this? I get it, maybe you're on the right, which means that you are just seething with jealousy that this whole thing came together. But we're gonna have more information, but JR, come on, that was awesome.
Yeah, no, it seems like fun, and it's another way that you can use the technology that we're in now to actually show who you really are as a politician, as someone that's elected official that usually we don't get much contact to. You know, the social media sites have allowed that for many of them. And the real ones are themselves on those sites. And this transfers over here too. Donald Trump loves Twitter, but can you imagine him actually going on to actually interact with people in real time? No. And if you want to complain about her playing when she could be working, let's not get on that subject, please. Let's not, because I assume this is in the evening when you're not working anyway. Let's not talk about golfing trips, and let's definitely not talk about how much he spent on those golfing trips for playing games when he should be doing work or watching TV that he's specifically shown us. So anyway, I just want to address some of the potential, frustrations with her doing this.
And then, and there was all of that and more. But yeah, people are saying, so JR, really fast, because I don't think you've played this. This is one of those games where you find out at the beginning whether you're the imposter or not. So one person, hypothetically, there's a lot of games like this. One person will be the spy or the imposter or the killer, and the others need to figure it out. And so that moment when it's, when you have to like check your card effectively to see which you are, can be really scary. She was the imposter in her first game. And I actually remember there's another game like this, a board game, where one of you is the killer. And the whole game is just, if you're the killer, you're trying to hide that you are, put suspicion on other people. And the first time we played it, my wife looked at her card and then said, I can't do it. I can't do it. Because she was the killer and she didn't want to do it. It's a lot of pressure. And she killed someone apparently in the first 30 seconds, which is really funny, being killed by AOC. That's how I want to go. But anyway, let me give you a little bit more information about this, because this was not just for games. This was to get out the vote. And if anything is going to be successful in that, this event probably was. AOC was an imposter in her first game, and her stream alone peaked at 435,000 concurrent viewers. For context, that's not as many concurrent viewers as Drake and Ninja's record-breaking Fortnite stream. I don't understand how that was bigger, but it's perhaps the third biggest ever. And that's not to mention the fact that other streamers, including Ilhan Omar, were streaming it as well. When you add up all of that, it's something like 600,000 people who were watching it simultaneously, which is just insane. And that's awesome. And you know, I know there was, I think Myth was one of the streamers with a lot of followers on Twitch, who's never voted before and said that that Myth is going to, and probably a lot of their viewers are probably going to. So I think this is great. There's very few people in government who could do this and not have it be unbearable. Those are two of them right there.
Yeah, because many of the people that maybe don't vote or are not interested in doing it, a lot of times may say something like, oh, well, you know, they're all the same anyway. Oh, it doesn't matter. It's not going to affect my life. And this is, again, an opportunity to see the potential differences and actually know who you're voting for, rather than just a name on a ballot. And you're like, oh, that last name sounds fun. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, man, that first name. She has the same first name as my grandmother. I'm voting for her. Like, the reasons people vote, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I feel like that's many times the case. And if they actually get a chance to know who they're voting for and what they potentially stand for outside of what cable news tells you, it's beneficial. And it actually gives you some reason to stand in those 11-hour lines, which should not exist in the first place.
Yeah, totally, totally. And by the way, really fast, because we showed that video of just AOC being like something that everybody has to love. Ilhan Omar, underrated, awesome person. She posted, this is a tweet that Ilhan Omar, representative, posted. Can I show you this? This is her computer specs. Very admirable, actually. That is badass. See, that she's posing like that. I mean, she's got a great SSD. She's got the RTX 2060, not bad. That's the I have a mobile version on the new laptop that I just got. And then she posted this, captioned, "When you're winning." Come on! She's got the gamer headphones on. She's got the awesome lighting in the case. This is the next generation. This is what we need. You know, someday the neoliberals are going to take over gaming and make it lame, but for now it's the cool kids. So that's fun.
I actually, I appreciate the picture Representative Omar posted. I don't appreciate the specs, because it's like she's speaking another language. I have no idea what any of that means.
I mean, it speaks to me. What if she's speaking my language? I mean, come on. This is all you need to know. Ilhan Omar rocks with 32 gigs of RAM. That means she's got to be doing 4K like video editing or something. Oh, come on. What do you need 32 gigs for? Anyway, there was a question in the audience, and it was, John, why didn't you do this? I didn't think to. I just didn't. Obviously, I wanted to. What are you talking about? I would love to. It didn't happen. And if you're wondering, am I salty? No, it is not accurate to say that I'm salty. What's accurate to say is that, like Lot's wife in biblical times, I am a pillar of salt. Obviously, it would have been my dream to do this. It didn't happen for a very simple reason. Nothing good happens to me. That's it.
We're working on it, John. We're working on it. Maybe you should shoot her a couple of damage report and Dragon Squad t-shirts. Maybe she'll rock one.
That's probably what'll do it. I don't know. Anyway, maybe someday, maybe if they do more events, I don't know. We have to bear in mind that this was a Twitch event, and the whole point is to get the biggest audiences possible. And all of the streamers that she streamed with have very big audiences, specifically on Twitch. We're still very much building up on Twitch. We haven't been doing it for very long at all. TDR really has only started at some point during the pandemic. YouTube is a very different matter. We have a very large audience on YouTube, but that's not what they were doing. They were doing a Twitch thing, and they want as many they want as big of an audience as possible. I would also argue, hypothetically, people watching the show probably have already voted. So I don't know that they need to be convinced as much as some of these gamers' audiences.
Well, I'm just inspired now. I'm on Twitch. I just don't do anything with it. Time to launch it. Everybody go follow me on Twitch. I'm gonna start playing some games, ones that I have. I'm gonna put up my specs. And since I have this horrible internet stream, it's going to be very, very underwhelming what you see when I put up my specs.
That does sound good. You know what we've been talking about doing? So we have game night for TYT, and we always play like Jackbox games. So we've been talking about doing Among Us for literally weeks at this point. But the problem is a lot of the people who come on game night, that's a level too hard for them to do. But maybe we could set up something.
Why not?
Play a little bit of Among Us. I've always loved games like that. We'll think about it.
Okay.
Anyway, JR, thank you so much. Always glad to have you on. You made it a big news Wednesday. Thank you.
Well, I just want to appreciate and thank everyone who decided to hang on with me as I jumped in and out. But it was still a big news Wednesday. We'll take it. We'll take it that way.
It was exciting. It was suspicious behavior, a bit sus. So we have our eye on you in the future. But anyway, thank you, JR. Everyone follow JR over at JR Jackson on Twitter. And Jer, we'll see you soon.
Apparently on Twitch too. See you guys later. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Apparently on Twitch too. Everyone do that. Over the past few years, truth in politics, what's honest, what's accurate, what's grounded in reality, has seemed to be worth less and less with every passing day. And in 2020, that has had very large consequences that we can see in the news basically every day. But what if there was a plan? Something that would put us back on the path towards people actually caring whether what they believe has any basis in fact. Well, we have a man who's going to be joining us to break down one possible path towards that. The co-author of Pro Truth, A Practical Plan for Putting Truth Back into Politics, Tim Ward. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, my pleasure to be here.
Very glad to have you here. As soon as we saw the book, I knew that I was going to want to talk to you because this is one of the things that has been bothering me for years, that people. I can't say what it was like 100 years ago, but I know that recently it seems like people don't really care if they believe things that are true, if the politicians they support are telling them things that are true. Tell me a little bit about your decision to engage in this area of truth in politics.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm a former journalist, and back in my journalistic days, one of the things that drove me was getting to the truth. You know, what was really going on behind the issues and getting people to explain clearly what was really happening. In politics, this is really important because politicians are often tempted to lie, right? They want to say things that will make people want to vote for them. But what keeps them from doing it is when people hold them accountable for the truth. Man, if you think back, Nixon resigned because he knew he was going to be thrown out of office. Clinton lied, was impeached for, you know, a lie about, you know, his personal sexual dalliances, and then, you know, his party was thrown out in the next election. There was a cost to that. And what seems to have happened, strangely, is that for many politicians, there's no longer a cost to lying. In fact, the current president tells flagrant lies, the sorts of things that, oh my God, if you can imagine a previous president doing them, they'd be like thrown out of office right away. But the current president seems to lie with a kind of impunity. Mm-hmm. This, my co-author and I believe, is a slippery slope, because if you let politicians lie and you take truth out of politics, then the best liar wins. And that will inevitably lead to the erosion and destruction of democracy. You'll get corruption, you'll get incompetence and authoritarianism. And we're on that path.
Yeah, I would say we've got several of those. So I know we're going to talk about some of the tools that these massive liars use to exploit our cognitive weaknesses and things like that. And we're going to talk about the pro-truth pledge, trying to get people to pledge to care about this and to do what's necessary to return to a position where truth is actually valued. But you mentioned Trump, so I do want to start there. Trump is obviously a massive liar. You know, there's like something like 29,000 documented lies from the Washington Post. I don't even know if they're updating that anymore, but Here's a question I have for you. Is Trump just the best current liar, or is there something fundamentally different about him and his movement? So basically, if Trump goes away, is that going to do a good portion of the work towards getting to where we need to be, or is he just emblematic of a trend?
I think he's emblematic of a trend. And indeed, it's not a trend that's unique to the United States. Many people are strongly led by their values, which may be religious beliefs, that may be traumas or circumstances of history that have shaped them. And when those values seem to be losing, it's a political struggle, it's sometimes tempting just to create false stories that will push you ahead. The problem is, in a democracy, if people begin to believe false stories, don't take a look at truth as mattering, not just their values, then they can be led into a situation where, first of all, they're accepting non-truths. But the next step from that, when you get authoritarians in power, is it becomes illegal to question what the government tells you. This is what I think Americans have not got. When I was a young man, I taught English in China for a year. I saw what it's like living in a totalitarian system where if you spoke the truth different than what the government told you was true, you could be put in jail. People lived in fear. And we're seeing this happening today in post-communist Russia, in Turkey. Not only are journalists getting imprisoned, but people are suffering for telling the truth. So man, if you say the truth will set you free, which is a bedrock of American democracy as well as biblical, the opposite is also true. You follow lies, you are gonna end up in chains, my friend. Mm-hmm.
So let's try to get into a little bit of who might be responsible for this. So obviously you have the liars, they're lying. You also have people. It seems to me, looking at regular people across America, they seem to care less. Like QAnon has absolutely exploded over the past couple of years. So is this that Trump and others are getting more sophisticated in understanding what makes a successful lie, how you can get away with this? Or is this also that people are moving away from really caring if their political beliefs are informed by accurate facts and just wanting to, I don't know, in a difficult time like 2020, wanting to believe these things that make them feel better? Where's the responsibility mm-hmm. there? Who's most right. responsible?
Social media. I mean, the real change from between what's happened to us in the last 20 years is the rise of social media. What this means is people are being bombarded by false information, by lies disguised as truth, as legitimate reporting in many cases, like a hundredfold what they were more than 20 years ago, right? You used to see the National Enquirer in the newspaper stand, and people knew, oh, alien baby, Elvis's alien baby. People knew, oh yeah, that's just crap. Some people read it, some people believed it, but most people knew better. But now we're seeing very sophisticated, deliberately quite often planned misinformation cams that come to us through social media. And here's why that gets past our defenses. Somebody sees it on social media, they send it to their friends and relatives. So a friend or relative of yours, who's a social media friend of yours, sends you something. When we hear information from our friends and relatives, we are inclined to trust it more than when we hear it from strangers. Social media allows misinformation to get through those filters and then show up on posts from people we like or trust. So it's harder to spot the lies when they're incoming. And this is one of the purposes of the book Pro-Truth. It's to help better protect people from lies when they're incoming, because they often get past our filters. And if they're in there and then we say, well, is this true or not? It's already started to do some damage. So that's the first thing, spot lies when they're incoming. Then you can take action to push back.
So I know that you can't go through everything. It obviously is a book length process to learn how to ward this off. But what are some simple things that people who might be watching this that are likely to be active users of social media, what can they do to be a little bit better prepared to identify false information?
Sure, and I'll say not only social media, but also when politicians speak, whether at events or rallies or debates, spot those lies. So chapter one outlines 10 lies, types of lies that politicians often tell, how to spot the structure of a lie. Like, for example, somebody who makes a vague statement, I have a plan, but they don't give any background behind it. You know, no evidence. So, oh, if they had a plan, wouldn't they reveal some of those details? So absent that, you know, you got a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's one, spot the lies. But to me, the biggest thing is something called the illusory truth effect. Become smart about this devastating effect. When we hear things repeated more often, we are more inclined to believe they're true. That's a cognitive bias that affects all of us. It doesn't mean we'll 100% believe a lie, but we are more easily persuaded. The best example for this is the way Trump on social media and Twitter said crooked Hillary again and again and again. And I remember at the time being really flummoxed by some of my friends who'd say, Hillary, yeah, I like her, but I don't really trust her. I'd say, why? What are the facts that make you distrust her? They say, I don't really know. There's just something about her. Well, that something was Trump, like the drip, drip of a Chinese water torture, was repeating crooked Hillary again and again and again. When you hear something, even if you know it's not true, many, many times, it's hard to defend against it seeming more real.
Yeah. Yeah. And for people who spend a lot of time on social media, they're going to come across those sorts of repetitive lies. So I know you have the book, but you also have this, the pledge, the pro-truth pledge. What are some of the components of it, and what is the objective of establishing this pledge?
Right. So the pledge can be found by anybody on protruthpledge.org. The point is that when you follow these truthful behaviors on social media, you will make your social network less inclined to error, and you can also spread more truthful behaviors to others. So they are, first of all, verify truth. Fact check before you share. Now, that's something that was challenging to me, but when I started to doing it, I discovered how many times I was about to share something that frankly didn't measure up to good fact checking. So secondly, honor truth. If people who have different political perspectives from you post something, you fact check it and you discover it's true, tell them, I fact checked this, it turned out to be true, and you helped me update my belief. I appreciate you publishing truthful information. And also hold your own friends to account. If they're on your side of the political spectrum and they publish something that's not true, tell them, you know, this is actually hurting our side because our side depends on truthful, credible information.
Yeah.
So that in a nutshell is what those 12 truthful behaviors are all about.
And so far, how has the reception been? Have you been able to get anybody notable, anybody where it really matters that they're telling the truth? Have they signed on to the pledge?
Yeah, really fortunately, we've had more than 100 elected officials sign it, more than 7 sitting members of Congress, and 2 former presidential campaigns, Beto O'Rourke and Tim Ryan, both signed the pledge within the last year.
So as you were describing a few of these processes, it made me think of some of the changes that Twitter has made in the run-up to the election, where they've changed how retweeting information works, which retweeting is obviously one of the biggest parts of Twitter. Instead of just letting someone retweet it, it prompts you to add something to it, presumably to make it a little bit more of a cognitive effort to retweet something. And if you're retweeting an article that it registers you haven't clicked on, it prompts you to read it before spreading it, which seems like it should be obvious, but apparently it's not. Are those sorts of things that you think could be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen some remarkable moves in social media platforms towards truthfulness, including not just what you said, but Twitter even flagging or taking down things that clearly seem to violate just plain old truthfulness. They didn't come up with this. They did it because people were angry and people were saying, I don't like it when these platforms allow lies. I think there's more work to be done. The platforms themselves need to be held accountable. Just as any supermarket, you know, that was trying to sell you a magazine that was filled with lies and didn't flag it in such a way that you knew this was not truthful. So our social media platforms need to just accept they've become gatekeepers of truth and they cannot allow lies, especially given the kinds of concerted efforts that are being done by foreign actors to interfere with our democracy through social media campaigns deliberately designed to get inside people's filters and make them believe lies. It's a big battle that we're still in the middle of.
Yeah, well, my last question then will be about that battle, because many of the things that Twitter and Facebook have done recently, including flagging fake and false information, President Trump has run afoul of that any number of times. you know, people like us who want only truthful information, especially when it's about something important like a pandemic, to be spread like that. His followers have hated that and they have attacked those moves by Twitter. Should we accept this as just a cost of doing business? That's just part of this battle? Or is there something we can do to try to get them to be a little bit more understanding of social media giants weighing in to some extent on what is true and what is not?
Well, I don't think you're going to get understanding on the part of the electorate that has thrown their weight behind Trump. They've clearly thrown their weight behind somebody who does not value truth, who in fact rose to power, political power, on a lie, the lie of birtherism. And they are doing this, I believe, in good part out of a sense of desperation, of feeling that the things they value in this country are falling by the wayside. And I believe what's really necessary is a reaching out between people left and right across the divide. It didn't used to be that Republicans hated Democrats. The Democrats thought Republicans were trying to destroy the country, and that Republicans thought Democrats were haters of our nation. We have to find those common values, and these means having conversations about freedom. Frankly, I think truth is important for freedom. Mm-hmm. You can't be free unless you know what the facts are, right? You can't disagree about policy, about how do you create jobs, unless you know what the jobless rate is. You can't agree on a strategy for fighting a pandemic unless you know what are the vectors of disease. Those are facts. If you want your freedom, if you want a nation that's going to be strong and powerful, you need to agree around true facts. If you don't do that, really, we will lose this democratic experiment that has made this country so great.
Yeah.
So that would be my message. Reach out. Don't try to change other people with facts first. Find their values. Find what you've got in common. Then you can have conversations about truth.
I agree. Anyone watching this that'd like to learn more about some of the theories, the movement, or the pledge, the book is Pro-Truth, A Practical Plan for Putting Truth Back into Politics. Tim Ward, thank you. You're seeing the book there now. Tim Ward, we really appreciate you joining us today on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.